Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, April 24th. And just like you guys, still waiting on some Stan Van Gundy news this week. But in the meantime, this is your boy Matt Shook, an AP freelancer out in Chicago covering the NBA. And a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter across the country for over a decade as well. Today, we're going to be talking about Monday's playoff action and rundown Tuesday's schedule for the NBA playoffs. And also going to tell you the free agent that the Pistons should pursue this offseason. Not a franchise changer, but a guy who could help set a new tone for the franchise. And we'll have another big segment of Pistons playoff playback. We don't have to play back too far in the history for this one here, but if you're watching what I'm watching with these NBA playoffs, it's been an encouraging one somewhat for Pistons fans. You see a wide-open Eastern Conference, obviously inexcusable in a lot of ways for the Pistons to miss the playoffs for the second straight year, especially given that the Eastern Conference is pretty wide open. But you see teams like, I think Philly's probably the favorite to take the Eastern Conference right now with the way that they're playing. And obviously that was a team that just got into the playoffs for the first time this year in many seasons. So you can see where that door might be open if you're an optimistic Pistons fan over these next couple years. And then you don't see any, you know, teams, you got Giannis in Milwaukee, and you got a couple of real good young players and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum for the Boston Celtics, but not like there's a juggernaut in the Eastern Conference that's going to be unstoppable or tough to beat. And in the Western Conference, you're seeing some franchises that really are going to have to take a look at what they're doing and maybe retool a little bit. And I'm talking about the Portland Trail Blazers, maybe the Minnesota Timberwolves, maybe the Oklahoma City Thunder. So not just because you've gotten the playoffs doesn't mean you're riding high. You're looking at some great times ahead as, you know, Paul George goes to L.A. or maybe Minnesota thinks about, really, did they want Tom Thibodeau coming back for this year or getting back in the franchise on the sideline this year or not? Really, how much talent is there on that team when they got Wiggins tied up for all those years and all that money? And then Portland, you know, what do you do with that backcourt going forward and the lack of talent on the back end that they have right now? I've heard people say recently the Pistons are in the worst situation in the NBA, or maybe the worst situation in Detroit sports. I disagree. And again, I got to do this podcast every day, so maybe that's my job as the Pistons podcaster to jump on the bandwagon a little bit. But I think in Detroit, it's clearly the Red Wings that are a team that are kind of going nowhere right now. I mean, Larkin's a good player, but that's kind of about it. Anthony Mantha, not really anything special. Bertuzzi, not really a guy that's going to turn the franchise around. No goalie, no great prospects coming up in Grand Rapids or anything. I saw a video with Ted Colfin and John Neo and that weird guy, Greg Krupa from the Detroit News, on a video. What's his deal, by the way? But talking prospects and talking about the season wrap-up, a nice watch. It was about a half-hour video. Pretty depressing watch, though, as a Red Wings fan. And as far as NBA teams who are in a worse spot than the Pistons, I think ones that are kind of no-brainers are Orlando, kind of perpetually in this bad spot right now. Brooklyn, no first-round pick and really not a lot of, really no front-end talent. If you want to make a case that D'Angelo Russell could be a very good player, but there's just not a lot on that team right now. The Sacramento Kings are the Sacramento Kings. I don't think De'Aaron Fox has come in and changed that franchise's fortunes around or anything like that. The Charlotte Hornets, similar situation with than the Pistons, but I would argue that Kemba Walker is kind of dwarfed on front-end talent by, you know, Griffin and Drummond there. Obviously, a backcourt guy compared to front-court guys, and people are, a lot of people, you could easily make the argument that the point guard is more important these days, but I'd take the two stars over the one right now. But again, maybe a little bit of a toss-up. Atlanta, well, what do they have to speak of right now? Dallas, I know Dennis Smith is a good player and has a possible good future, but I'll take what the Pistons have over one pretty good rookie right now. And then there's a few teams out there that you could make an argument either way, and maybe these teams would think it's a joke that a Pistons podcast would bring it up, but the Chicago Bulls. I mean, I'm not sold on Zach LaVine or Chris Dunn, and certainly a great first year from Lauri Markkanen, but is there a lot to suggest that he's going to be a superstar player for years to come? You know, we'll see. The Clippers, probably how you feel about the Pistons versus the Clippers is probably how you feel about the trade that they made this year, but you think about after this season, Tobias Harris will be a free agent. You want to keep him around? Well, it's going to cost you about $20 million per season. And then, you got DeAndre Jordan, Lou Williams. You know, I mean, it's a decent roster, but where's that team going, especially in a tougher Western Conference, too? And I'd even put the New York Knicks on this list too, when you throw in a couple decades of futility that they've had, the frustration of the fan base, and then the fact that they really haven't gotten those big time free agents to come to New York like the tail goes as far as them. But and then you got the injury to Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, maybe he doesn't come back until maybe midseason next year, and he's already got the angst about the Knicks stink on him right now. I don't like where that situation's headed. So I mean, it's not as horrible as people are talking about it sometimes with the Pistons. But going back to the playoffs, the Rockets topped the Minnesota Timberwolves 119-100. On Monday night, 36 for James Harden, 22 for Towns, 19 for Butler, and 14 for Wiggins, but all of them had rough shooting nights. Although I will say Derrick Rose, 17 points. He's been pretty good in the postseason, definitely better than Jeff Teague. And now the Rockets find themselves up 3-1 over Minnesota. Should be a wrap in Game 5 at home for them on Wednesday night. Like I said, where's Minnesota going as a franchise right now? Speaking of series that should be a wrap sometime soon, Utah, they pummeled Oklahoma City 113-96. If you know anything about me and listen to this podcast, you know that I'm one of the bigger Russell Westbrook detractors out there. Hater, I guess you could call me. I just don't like him on the basketball court and pretty much well off of it from what I can tell as well. I just love when he gets beat in the playoffs. It confirms some of my deep-seated beliefs about basketball. He's kind of the epitome of a selfish player, and that doesn't win unless you're, as good as Kobe or as good as Jordan, and I don't think he's that guy. Or maybe he is, but you can't be that guy anymore in this league with the type of talent that's spread around the league. You just got to be someone who makes your teammates better and has more of a leadership stake as the team's best player. Donovan Mitchell, 33 points in that one. Yikes. If you're a Pistons fan, that one hurts for sure, as it does every day. Joe Ingles, 20 points, 5 threes for the Utah Jazz there. Paul George, 32. Russell Westbrook did have 23 and 14 rebounds, 7 of 18 though shooting, so not a great game from him, and especially after declaring that he's going to shut down Ricky Rubio. That definitely didn't happen with the Jazz. Running roughshod all over Oklahoma City. Carmelo Anthony, 5 of 18 for 11 points, a rough one for him. Tonight, two gone fishing candidates for the NBA. First, though, the Bucks and the Celtics knotted at 2-2. Game 5 is tonight in Boston, 7 o'clock. The Celtics are 3-point favorites there, but this one game is on NBA TV, if you can believe that, between two pretty good teams. The disrespect there. Obviously, I'm among the fans out there interested to see how that one goes. And then the Heat could be closed out tonight in Philadelphia for Game 5. They trail 3-1 to Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and the Sixers, an 8 o'clock game. Philly, 10-point favorites at home. I could see the crowd fired up in Philly and Miami throwing up the white flag and maybe this one being a little bit of a blowout. You heard it here first. And then we got Golden State. They should close it out tonight against San Antonio at home. 10:30 game there. The Dubs are 11.5-point favorites. The Spurs are again without Greg Popovich, who's lost his wife, sadly, last week. A lot of people pretty fired up about New Orleans, by the way, as they're waiting for Golden State in the next round. The upset bid for Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday and the Pelicans. I'll give them a game, but give me Golden State in 5 in that one. We'll have plenty of time to preview the second round as it gets a little bit closer, though. But next, I'm going to tell you about the free agent that the Pistons need to take a look at. This guy's not going to turn the franchise around like Chauncey Billups did or anything like that, but maybe kind of in the Ben Wallace mode a little bit. Maybe that's probably overhyping him. Certainly, definitely probably overhyping him. But just kind of a bit player that I could see the Pistons going after. It could help set a tone here in Detroit for the future of this franchise. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons, because we are listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we got reasonable rates, so email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. Yes, sir! Got another chapter in Pistons playoff playback a little bit later. Since we can't live in the present with Detroit Pistons playoffs, we're going to relive the past a little bit. And I get a lot of you guys asking me about specific trades or specific moves that the Pistons should make, and I feel like maybe this year I came up short a little bit in giving specific examples. It's just really tough. There's a huge league out there. There's a lot of players. There's a lot of salary cap machinations. There's a lot of, we watch the Pistons and we know these guys, but I don't know a lot about, you know, player B on the bench of the Milwaukee Bucks to be able to tell you, you know, for instance, if he's a good defender or what he excels in offensively all the time. We can get a little bit to get into it a little bit more come playoff time when we hunker down and watch these teams a little bit more. But I had my guy Fluffy on Twitter over the weekend asking for specifics for what I was intimating that when I looked at Portland losing and getting swept, I said, you know, maybe that is another example of a team that is going to need to make some changes. So when you say that guys like Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond and even Reggie Jackson are completely untradeable, that maybe those guys are a little bit more tradable than you might think, especially a guy like Drummond, who's an all-star for two out of the last three seasons, still young and has a marketable skill as probably the best rebounder in the NBA. And like I said, now you look at Portland, for instance. That's a team that's wanting to get out of salary cap hell and has too little guards and not enough impact players when you go 3 through 8 on their roster. And you look at Oklahoma City, like I said, another team that's probably going to have to go backward before going forward, especially, you know, with the assumption that Paul George is leaving after the season. But I'm going to give you a little taste of specifics here. And I also get that at some point I'm going to get called out for my weird fascination with the Brooklyn Nets, who I do believe is probably in the worst shape of any team right now, all things considered. Although they have a nice crop of 7 or 8, you know, young players who could be good players in the NBA. None of them are going to be great players, but you know, doing as well as Sean Marks could possibly do with the crap that he was handed to by Billy King and trading those picks for Garnett and Paul Pierce back then. But you know, I did lobby for the Pistons to maybe look at Damari Carroll at the trade deadline, and I went with another Brooklyn Nets guy for someone that I wanted to look at in free agency. And I know that we're still, you know, months away of July 1st of the opening of free agency, but it's been on my mind lately. So a guy that I think the Pistons should go after in free agency is Quincy Acey. Now, only 6'7", kind of an undersized, low post guy, but tough enough of a player to guard bigs, especially in today's NBA. And Pistons fans know he got into that Easter Sunday little tussle with Andre Drummond. I came on the podcast recently, or you know, shortly after that game, and I talked about how he'd be a hard guy to root for teams. But I've thought about it since then, and I had a chance to watch him up close and personal with one of the Bulls games that I covered at the end of the year. He'd also be a hard guy to root against. I mean, if your team is going up against a tough guy like Quincy Acey, that would be tough. And maybe he wouldn't be so hard to root for if he's the one that's kind of the guy who's giving your team some problems on both ends of the floor, really, especially for Pistons fans who are used to guys like that with Dennis Rodman and Rick Mahorn and Bill Laimbeer and all that. And he's coming off of a rough year for his standards behind the arc and three-pointers. He wasn't really much of a shooter coming out of Baylor, but added that facet to his game. But this past year, he shot 35% in Brooklyn's three-point-heavy offense, which is under the 36% league average, so a little worse than average in terms of the NBA. And he's a guy who's a volume shooter. He only played about 19 minutes a game, threw up 4 three-pointers, so he'll throw it up there. But, however, this year, over the last 13 games of the season, he shot 44% from three. And I know that's a little bit of a small sample size, but when you look at 2 years ago, when he really threw that three-pointer into his game, he was a 39% shooter from outside in 2015-16. And then last year, he in 2016-17, he improved to 41%. So I will say that the elevation in his shooting over the previous two seasons kind of is a little bit more of a significant trend than him falling to 35% this year, especially when he finished so strongly this year. And the reason I say that is because early in the season, he was dealing with an injury. He had an ankle surgery over the offseason. He did not work out last offseason until August, so he had a couple of months off there. And I was at a game, like I said, where the Nets took on the Bulls this year. I was in the locker room for that one afterwards. Quincy had his career high in points. I think he had 21 that night, knocked down 6 three-pointers, his career high there as well. The young guys were so happy for him. Alan Crabb had great things to say about him. Everyone acknowledged the fact that he had been struggling throughout much of the first half of the season and was really coming on lately as 2018 continued for the Nets. Kenny Atkinson, coach for the Nets, had this to say. "He's our spiritual leader, our bench leader, a great guy. I'll be honest, he has struggled with a lot of injuries. I think his ankle hasn't been fully healthy. He's played through a lot. As he's gotten healthier, he's been playing better. We saw what Q could do last year. I just love his spirit." And that was echoed by Quincy as well. As we talked to him in the locker room after the game, he said that the ankle was bothering him throughout most of the first half of the season, and then had a bunch of small injuries pop up the rest of the year. Now, of course, if you bring in Quincy Acey, that means that Anthony Tolliver is probably gone. It's something that I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks when you think about the cap situation that the Pistons are in, given the production that Anthony Tolliver had and the fact that he is a veteran, unrestricted free agent, probably not looking at too many more nice paydays coming forward for him at 33 in this league. So Anthony Tolliver should pursue the best contract he can get out there, and hopefully he goes out and gets it. And if you're a Pistons fan, maybe they can meet in the middle somewhere, and maybe the market isn't as strong for Anthony Tolliver as you might think for a stretch four who's really coming into his own as a three-point shooter. And I certainly want Anthony Tolliver back. He's the one Piston that I have somewhat of a personal connection to. I used to cover his Springfield, Missouri town, and he's beloved there. I talked to him a couple times in Springfield as well. Know a lot of people who are friends with him and know him very well too. But I think he's going to command some more money on the open market, and maybe much more than what he got for this, about $3.2 million with the Pistons this year. Like I said, Anthony Tolliver is going to be 33 this summer, while Quincy Acey is going to be 28 around the start of next year. Last year, the numbers aren't, you know, in Quincy's favor by any means. Like I said, Anthony was getting 9 points and 3 rebounds a game, while Quincy was getting 6 points and nearly 4 rebounds per game. Anthony Tolliver played a few more minutes per game than AC did, and like I said, clearly a better three-point shooter last year. Anthony was up close to 44%, while AC was down at 35% from three. But that was far and away Anthony Tolliver's best three-point percentage. And then again, how much of the stats, and especially the points per game and everything, how much was that kind of padded at the end of the year in some meaningless games? And I'm not saying that is something that Anthony Tolliver did wrong. He's a free agent trying to boost up his stock. But how many games at the end of the year was Tolliver putting up, you know, close to 20 or in the teens, whereas maybe he was more of a single-digit scorer throughout much of the year? So just something to think about. Obviously, when you have the amount of money tied up in Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin going into next season, throw John Luehr in there as well as an $11 million man for this team, can you go out and throw another $8 or $9 million or even $6 million a year at an Anthony Tolliver type to be the fourth highest paid player on your front court? I don't think so. And that being said, I don't think you can go in with just those three guys, especially given John Luehr's ankle problems, and Henry Ellenson as your fourth big man. I think that maybe you need to have a little bit of veteran insurance in case maybe Henry Ellenson never really does reach up and take those minutes. And maybe you can get it a little bit cheaper with a guy like Quincy Acey on the front court, and also a guy who can, you know, play some small ball three and get in the face of some guys and maybe even rough up some of the better players in the league, give the Pistons back some of that edge that they had back in the day. I do these Pistons playoff playbacks, and geez, I mean, it's just light years away from those teams that were successful here in Detroit. And I know that's not the only way to build teams, and just because the Pistons did in the past, it's not like they're married to that style of play or the Bad Boys or anything like that in the past, but it just seems like a city like Detroit and a franchise like the Detroit Pistons needs more guys like Quincy Acey who are going to start fights and who are going to be in the middle of dustups and really have more attitude than this team has had over these past couple years. So let me know what you think. Quincy Acey as a Pistons target, go out and offer. He was only making $1.7 million last year. Go up and offer him maybe a three-year, $9 million deal or something like that. Give him three a year, or maybe it takes maybe four. But I don't think it's going to take the six or seven or maybe even $8 or $9 million a year that it might cost to keep Anthony Tolliver around for another year or so. But like I said, we're going to go back in the past a little bit with Pistons playoff playback coming up next. But since we can't live in that present, we got to relive the past a little bit. But you know, in addition to the NBA playoffs, what the big sports news is this week. What are the Lions going to do at number 20 in the NFL draft? Do you want Marcus Davenport or do you want Harold Landry? Give me the tackle out of Florida, by the way. That's who I want. I want that Brian, the big guy from Florida who can kind of give some quarterback pressure through the middle. That's who I want. But anyway, those questions and more answered by Matt Derry of Locked On Lions, the host of that podcast. You can check that out every day. We got NBA podcasts for every team. So if you're adopting a team in the playoffs, go ahead and follow their podcast. Check us out on our landing page at lockedonsports.com. We got you covered here at the Locked On Network, your team every day. It is now time for Today in Pistons Playoff Playback, April 24th, 2016, just 2 years ago. The Pistons swept out of the playoffs by LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, Detroit losing the last game, the last playoff game in the Palace, 100-98. That's right, the final Pistons playoff game ever in Auburn Hills, completing the four-game sweep by the Cavs, three pretty close ones, kind of sandwiched around a Game 2 drubbing in Cleveland. Kyrie had 31 points in that one. LeBron, 22, 11, and 6. Marcus Morris led the way for the Pistons with 24 points. 23 for Tobias Harris there as well. Stanley Johnson, as you remember, went at LeBron in this series, complaining about preferential treatment for James after Game 1, and then having a little bump with him in Game 2. He had a Players Tribune article that came out about after the Cavs won the championship that year, talking about what he learned from game or from his rookie season, how tough the NBA was, and how he doesn't regret not backing down from LeBron James. Just a lot of good feelings for Stanley Johnson after that series. A lot of pretty good feelings about the Pistons and where they were headed after year two of the Stan Van Gundy era. Of course, Cleveland would go on to break the drought that year, winning its first sports championship in that city's history in like a million years or something like that. Meanwhile, it seemed like the Pistons got out of that season, and it seemed like as fans we thought they had a real starting five in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Andre Drummond, Tobias Harris, Marcus Morris, and Reggie Jackson, along with that tough young bench guy, 19-year-old Stanley Johnson. But not much else, though, on the roster. You had guys like Anthony Tolliver, who seemed like a little bit washed up at that time. Aaron Baines, a nice backup center. But then you had given too many minutes to guys like Steve Blake out there, too. Prompted the offseason spending spree on bench players with the cap room that Stan Van Gundy had during the worst possible summer to sign role players. So that's why you throw $44 million at guys like John Luehr, 3 years for and $21 million for Boban when no one was bidding against you in that one. $6 million a year for Ish Smith, a guy who's pretty limited other than being a nice change of pace backup point guard, but certainly probably not worth the $6 million three-year deal that he got from Stan Van Gundy. And, of course, how we know how all those moves worked out for the Pistons going forward. But that's your look back at Pistons playoff playback, our proud look at some of the past, nice runs. And also we consider that 2015-2016 a nice run as well, as the Pistons looked like they were going on to bigger and better things in that one taste of the playoffs after many, many years without being in the playoffs. But the downturn since then has been a tough one to swallow for fans who thought that the franchise was on its way up. But we'll see what the future will bring. So give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, and another underscore after that, and also at the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Check out the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-Matt Schoch. And I want to thank you guys for listening. And let me know what you think about the Quincy Acey suggestion and who else you might want to see for guests. I got an exciting one coming soon and some other ones that I'm chasing as well. And just let me know what you think about summer content and what you guys want to see. So appreciate the support, and we'll talk to you all again very soon.